This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending the 27th of February 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 27th of February, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And John Regan.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: leaders bid to restore faith in local politics, 14-year wait to buy home in Winchester, and council tax frozen for sixth year in a row. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is the leader's bid to restore faith in local politics. The new leader of Winchester City Council has pledged to restore faith in local politics after fresh controversy and resignations over Silver Hill. Conservative councillor Frank Pearson promised an independent review of decision-making on the £165 million scheme. The leader, elected at council last Thursday, has set a target of 6 months to hear results of the review, which it is hoped will establish how decisions were made over more than a decade. The High Court in London earlier this month ruled that the City Council had acted unlawfully by not submitting the redevelopment to tender. City bosses are now in talks with auditors, and Local Government Association, LGA, officials are expected to head the inquiry. The LGA could send in another council to investigate Winchester's affairs. Councillor Pearson said, "One thing is certain, no officer or councillor will be part of that review because it's independent. I don't want to be accused of trying to influence what they find and what their decisions are." But Liberal Democrat councillor Martin Todd accused the new leader of stitching up the review brief in secret to limit it to Silver Hill. "It's not just the Silver Hill project and how we managed it that needs a review and needs to change," he said. "It's the council as a whole that needs a review and needs to change." Silver Hill will next be discussed at a special meeting of Cabinet next Tuesday, March the 3rd. Last week's council meeting was fraught with tension after a string of resignations. Deputy leader Victoria Weston, followed leader Rob Humby and Labour scrutiny chairman Chris Pines in stepping down after a High Court ruling struck a body blow to the city centre development. Councillor Markham Wright publicly quit the Tories over what he later called an endemic culture of self-interest in the Guildhall. After beating Liberal Democrat Councillor Leslie Lerney by 26 votes to 24, Councillor Pearson said, "I consider myself a safe pair of hands. What are my objectives? First, to establish stability in these turbulent times. Second, to listen to our residents' voice and take on board sometimes very contradictory comments. To the residents in the wider Winchester district, I will promise to listen to their concerns in order to restore their faith in Winchester City Council during my tenure." Councillor Pearson, a former mayor, has been a councillor for 12 years and sat on the planning committee which approved Henderson's controversial changes in December. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who brought the High Court action which ruled that the council twice acted unlawfully when it failed to tender the scheme, repeated calls for Chief Executive Simon Eden, Corporate Director Steve Tilbury and Head of Estates Kevin Warren to resign over misleading guidance given to councillors. And Councillor Wright, who defected after 12 years as a Conservative, warned that politicians have been blamed for officers' mistakes. "The judicial judgment firmly puts the blame on the information we were given that was wrong," he told the Chronicle after the meeting.
14-year wait to buy home in Winchester. Report reveals struggle to get on the housing ladder. It will take the average Winchester worker more than 14 years to buy a home in the city, new figures have shown. According to the Office of National Statistics, the average weekly wage in Winchester is £613.70, £92.90 more than the national average and £46.70 higher than the South East. but because of the cost of buying a home in the area, it will take around 14 years to earn enough money to buy at the average Winchester price of £430,706. It follows a new report from Shelter, which says young families and working couples are struggling to buy in the modern financial climate. Shelter says that failure to build enough affordable homes has left millions trapped in an unstable and expensive rental market, where saving enough for a home of their own is now just a distant dream. Shelter's chief executive, Campbell Robb, said parents are right to be worried. The reality is that unless we get a grip on the housing shortage soon, children today could spend decades paying out dead money in expensive rents or living at home well into adulthood with little hope of planning for their own families. The only way to make sure young people have a hope of a home of their own is for politicians to roll up their sleeves and commit to building enough truly affordable homes. Research for the housing charity looked at average wages, house prices, rents, and spending on essentials to show the challenge faced by those trying to save for a home of their own in the region. And it found that couples without children face over 8 years of saving, leaving many with the difficult choice between getting on the property ladder and starting a family. Single people face an even greater barrier, with a wait of more than 16 years until they can afford to buy nationally. It would take a single working female with an average weekly wage of £551.70, 9 years to buy a flat, or 23 years to buy a detached house in Winchester. Stricter lending criteria means it is more difficult for prospective home buyers to get a mortgage. Most buyers now need deposits of at least 15 to 20%, as opposed to zero deposits before the credit crunch. Stephen Gates, chairman of the Winchester Area Chamber of Commerce, who is, there's a little picture of him, said the Chamber of Commerce has consistently supported the need for more affordable housing in Winchester. Whilst new housing developments can attract natural local resistance, it is important for there to be opportunities to live and work within Winchester if the city is to enjoy continued growth and prosperity. It is also important that innovative shared ownership schemes are developed to allow first-time buyers to access new housing.
And here's some good news. As the headline tells us, council tax frozen for sixth year in a row. Civic chiefs have capped local tax charges and parking fees, despite facing a £2.5 million budget deficit by 2020. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, the City Council's finance chief, said frontline services will be protected, despite government cuts forcing consecutive drops in council spending. Taxpayers in Band D homes, for example, will pay £126.27 for City Council services and £61.32 towards Winchester Town, and that's unchanged since 2010-11. Council tax at Hampshire County Council has also been frozen. Councillor Godfrey said, although the national economic climate is improving and the government's deficit reduction programme is having an effect, we're not yet out of the woods. Local government spending will continue to reduce. Our grants from government will continue to reduce, and people are still not finding it that easy to make ends meet. We can't increase charges, and we can't increase taxes if we're not as efficient as we can possibly be. A High Court ruling that the council acted unlawfully over the Silver Hill scheme has dented council forecasts with an expected £261,000 legal bill from January's judicial review to be arbitrated and split with co-developer Henderson. The revised budget in the wake of the judgment has also set aside £200,000 for an independent review of the scheme and £170,000 per year to borrow up to £5 million, which was previously owed by Henderson for land purchased at King's Walk. Officials are now looking to council reserves and capital spending for ways to fill income holes if Silver Hill is not developed in the next few years. Councillor Godfrey went on to say, "With the Silver Hill project being on hold, there's a gap in the finances in a couple of years' time, which we're going to need to fill with other activities or find more savings. And that's the focus of the next few weeks." The 2015-16 budget and tax rates were given final approval at full council last Thursday. And looking to future years, Councillor Godfrey said that council efficiency was a priority over tax cuts.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment and first person. Oh, and I think there's a couple of items from Belgarum. This will be followed by announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements for this week, 27th of February. Barnes, John William Charles Barnes, died peacefully at home on the 15th of February. Bullpit, Gwendolyn Joan Bullpit, née Shepherd, who died on the 15th of February. Hawk, Joan Ruby Hawk, née Pierce, died peacefully on the 13th of February after a long illness, aged 87. Herridge, Joan Herridge, died peacefully at home. McGee, Esme McGee, died peacefully on the 2nd of February in a nursing home in Essex. Mercer, Sybil Mercer, died peacefully in Stratford-on-Avon, but was formerly of Chandler's Ford. She was aged 93. Nicholson, Barry Nicholson, died peacefully at home on the 19th of February. And Trinder, Dorothy Trinder, also died peacefully at home on the 22nd of February. And now we move on to Christian comment, that's read by John.
Yes, and a very thought-provoking piece this week by Mary Gray. Last week, the Church of England bishops spoke out for a just society and were criticised for being political. Well, so has it ever been since the birth of the Church. Did not Jesus, himself a believing Jew, criticise the Jewish and Roman leaders of his times? And how many early church leaders railed against their emperors for opulence and corruption? In our own times, the Church of England has a solid reputation for its documents, for example, Faith in the City and Faith in the Countryside, pleading for justice in both contexts. The Catholic Church, too, has a rich history of social justice encyclicals since Rerum Novarum was published in 1893 by Pope Leo XIII. And more recently, the Church played its part in the public arena with The Common Good of 1997, and later in debates around the big society. This latter is relevant, as it originated with the Conservative Party itself prior to the election of 2010, and it included such prominent figures as Philip Blond, an Anglican, Ian Duncan Smith, a Roman Catholic, and Philippa Stroud, an evangelical, from the Centre for Social Justice, and was joined by many Conservative MPs. The Big Society, also called Compassionate Conservatism, addressed social and economic issues in a new way. It offered a new vision of society based on first principles, by rethinking fundamental political assumptions. And it matched this with an analysis of human well-being and motivation that was, and still is, sharply at odds with conventional economic wisdom, even its own. What is interesting is to see how its goals match those of Christian visions for local society. It aimed to support and strengthen the capacity for social enterprise and charities to be independent of government. It wanted the harnessing of self-organising networks and new technologies in the governments, production and financing of services. Church-affiliated projects were seen as important examples of these ideas and could be co-opted within each of these components. Here in Hampshire, for example, we can think of fair trade goods, credit unions, food banks, basic banks, street banks, housing charities, night shelters, climate change initiatives, asylum seekers. Churches are at the forefront of many of these social enterprises. Of the two views of human nature at work in the big society, one individualistic and the other communal, the latter, that flourishing is to be achieved in community, was the one most in harmony with the Christian vision. But whatever happened to this dream? How much more today do we need a vision of flourishing for society after the bitterness of austerity days, spiralling inequality between the super rich and the many groups suffering poverty and injustice? And where is this prophetic voice to come from if churches and faith groups remain silent?
Thank you, John. And now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you got the first, I think.
Absolutely. From Andrew Rutter, St John's Road, Winchester. Conservation protects character. Sir, I am increasingly alarmed at the steady reintroduction of flat roofs into Winchester conservation area. Architects and developers used to regularly use the argument that you couldn't see the roof from street level. This ignored the fact that Winchester is built in a narrow river valley, so that when you look out of your home and office, you see a historic roof space that complements the cathedral and other major buildings. This character is one of the things that attracts visitors and rewards residents in the varying light conditions in Hampshire. Even from the council's official viewpoint on St Giles's Hill, one of the blots in the townscape is the flat-roofed city offices built close to the cathedral in an emergency after a fire in the Guildhall. It now seems to be being repeated in the Chessel Street development, and this has nothing to do with the merits of the proposed land use. Since 1974, it has been conservation policy to require pitched roofs in the majority of developments. For example, when the flat-roofed Woolworth site was redeveloped, it improved the view from the cathedral. This is not just an aesthetic preference. Historically, in the climate, pitched roof with an inbuilt safety margin is the most practical way of draining water off buildings and avoid the earlier maintenance costs of flat roofs, as has been experienced in many post-war schools. As a society, we should be taking a long-term view and resist the often short-term financial advice. Conservation does not prevent development. It means ensuring that development is appropriate to the character of a particular area. Andrew Rutter, St John's Road, Winchester.
Next letter is from Michael Smethurst of Airlie Road, Winchester, headed Give Citizens Power to Shape Localities. Sir, it is to be hoped that Winchester City Council will learn from Silver Hill and drastically improve how it listens and works with citizens and citizen groups. At Westminster, the main political parties are all talking about the next government giving councils much greater control over council tax, business rates, and local fees and charges. At the same time, there is recognition that there is no point in handing power from one set of politicians to another. So if change comes, there will be legal obligations on councils to open up decision-making to much greater involvement from citizens and community groups. Silver Hill has shown how traditional political allegiances are dying in the 21st century. Future electoral success lies with parties which are open to giving citizens the power to shape services and help to maximise local social value. Michael Smethurst, Airlie Road, Winchester.
And this letter comes from Edward Fennell, who lives in Hyde, and it's again on the vexed subject of Silver Hill. It's headed, Silver Hill should blend in with city. Sir, the only silver lining to the Silver Hill fiasco is that it gives Winchester and its council the opportunity to reflect on what kind of urban centre it wants to become. One of the joys of living in Winchester is that it has so many facets. A cathedral, courts, local government, university, schools and college, local government and small to medium-sized retail. But there are clearly gaps in terms of housing, more diverse employment, a landmark heritage and music venue, a transport hub, healthcare, and dedicated public space. For a generation, Silver Hill has been the missing piece in the jigsaw that is Winchester, and the chance has now opened up for the Silver Hill area to complement and complete the rest of the city centre. As we start to think again about the function of Silver Hill, it must not be seen in isolation, but in how it can blend in with and make whole this unique city.
And another from David Gorsden. Be careful what you wish for. Sir, following recent events surrounding Silver Hill, rumours of rival bids and alternative design proposals are already circulating. We have to ask whether this is driven by self-interest or what is actually best for our city. Will these schemes be cohesive, considered, financially viable, deliverable and appropriate for a vibrant future, Winchester? Whilst there may still be issues to discuss and tune with the current plan, Winchester may have much to fear about what may follow if the current proposals are derailed. We may lose the best opportunity Winchester has ever had for Silver Hill and have to live with something considerably less appealing. David Gorsden, Avenue Road, Winchester.
Tree felling ruins our love of nature, so says Mrs. Michelle Fox Roussel of Hanover Lodge, St. Cross, Winchester. Sir, since we moved here 17 years ago, I have enjoyed the walk through the nature reserve, up St. Catherine's Hill and back along St. Faith's Meadows and St. Cross. Over the years, I have been delighted to see many birds and animals, including water voles, pipistrelle bats, kingfishers and water rails. The sense of enjoyment I experienced has, however, been replaced by disappointment at the misguided large-scale tree felling, which has been performed by Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, HIOWT. This has reduced many places to resembling a World War I battlefield with mud and stumps of trees and little else. The raison d'etre for doing this, we are told, on numerous plastic notices, is to remove non-native trees and to create open spaces for ground-nesting birds and butterflies within a 5-year timescale. The fact is, however, that few birds can recognise a non-native tree when they want to build a nest, and many butterflies actually lay their eggs and feed in woodland. We're now left with relatively silent and unattractive open spaces which have completely removed the sense of place one experiences in woodland walks. The well-meaning HIOWT volunteers cannot be blamed for this, since they are simply doing what is asked of them. But HIOWT management should seriously consider whether this sort of clear felling is really a benefit to those of us who love nature in all its diversity. This is Michelle Fox Roussel, Hanover Lodge, St. Cross, Winchester.
And now we have a letter from Councillor Roy Perry, who's the leader of Hampshire County Council. Headed, ex-leader remains man of principle. Sir, I was very sorry to see one of the outcomes of the court judgment on the Winchester Silver Hill development was the resignation of Rob Humby as the leader of the City Council. I think that action on his part, which is very unfortunate, demonstrates what a principled man he is. As a fellow council leader, I know that in such a role one receives legal and professional advice, often of a very technical nature, which it would be very unwise or even foolish to ignore, and will indeed lay one open to all sorts of issues of personal liability should one dismiss it. That being said, the buck stops on the leader's desk, and Rob Humby has demonstrated his integrity by recognising that and resigning. Rob is a hard-working and effective councillor. He's a member of the County Council, as well as of the Winchester City Council, and as County Councillor for Bishops Waltham, he retains my full confidence, and I value his judgment and advice.
Thank you. Now we move back in time, 100 years, I think, Nikki.
Yes, February 1915. Graphic account of bombing. An officer stationed at Colchester, writing to a Winchester gentleman, gives the following graphic account of the bomb dropping on that town on Sunday evening. You will have read about the German air raid visit to us here on Sunday evening. It was really most interesting and exciting. Blank and myself were about to sit down to supper when we heard an awful explosion. We at once rushed out to see what was wrong and both saw an aeroplane sailing away in the direction of Harwich. We went down to Butt Road, 100 yards from the artillery barracks, and saw the house in which the bomb fell. And another item. The statue raised to the memory of Florence Nightingale in Waterloo Place was unveiled privately on Wednesday morning, the committee having decided that it is no time for a great public ceremony. By the side of the statue stands Foley's statue of Sidney Herbert, which formerly stood in the War Office quadrangle, and a few yards in the rear to the, is the Crimean Memorial, the whole forming one of the most interesting and imposing groups of statuary in London.
So a couple of items from 50 years ago, February the 27th, 1965. No positive action on rate reform, says the first one. The usual pleas for rate reform were made, but no positive action to this end taken. When Hampshire County Council at Winchester on Monday agreed that the county rate should be increased by 4 pence in the pound for the coming financial year. After unsuccessful moves to effect further economies and lessen the increase, the council unanimously approved the rate of 6 shillings and 11 pence in the pound. And the other piece is New Forest ponies are now being exported to Sweden, and some very high-class stock went there during the past year, states the annual report of the New Forest Pony Breeding and Cattle Society. Shipment of a further 18 ponies to Sweden was lately arranged, among them the stallions Deeracres, Summertime and Muddiford Pete. Holland still takes the greatest numbers abroad, and the report states there seems to be no end to the popularity of the breed in that country.
Now a couple of pieces from 25 years ago, the first of which echoes some very live pieces of news coming from Parliament today. Local MP gets thumbs down. The people of Winchester gave their local MP, John Brown, a decisive thumbs down this week after news of his breach of parliamentary rules hit the headlines. Most of the people we spoke to felt he should resign at once. One of his very few supporters felt that he was, quote, not a bad guy, close quotes. But even he agreed that this situation gave cause for concern. Voters all felt that MPs should concentrate on their parliamentary and constituency work, leaving everything else well alone. Mr. Norman Tyrrell was concerned not only with Mr. Brown's financial affairs, but also with his divorce. And a second piece here. Grave concern at recent rumours over the possible transfer of the Southampton Football Club to Lord's Hill was expressed by Nursling and Rowlands parish councillors when they met at Nursling Village Hall last week. Recent reports on TVS had suggested that the Saints were considering moving to the Europa tennis site as one of their options. Inquiries to Southampton City Council, the owners of the land, had not, however, given local councillors much further information.
Thank you. Now we move on to Chronicle editorial comment. Nikki.
Again, headed Speed Up Review into Silver Hill. Frank Pearson's attempt to restore faith in local politics is to be supported. The new leader of Winchester City Council is trying to steady the ship after the damning High Court judgment threw the authority into turmoil. Among his first actions was to support an independent review of the decisions not to open the Silver Hill development to public tender. It is, however, worrying that he is suggesting a timescale of 6 months, which is far too long, and ensures the uncertainty over the scheme will drag on. That delay will mean the growing public cynicism about local politics will not begin to be properly addressed, especially if the council tries to stick with an untenable legalistic stance that Mrs. Justice Lang's ruling only affects the procurement process and not planning. Meanwhile, the actions of the Liberal Democrats are disappointing. To attempt to unseat the Tories from control of the council would do little to ease public contempt for politicians. It was the Lib Dems who decided against opening the scheme to tender back in 2004, when, amid some public concern, they opted to sign an agreement with the then-developer Thornfield. To now attempt to make political capital out of the Conservative essentially following the same unlawful policy is chutzpah of the lowest order.
Thank you. Now we move on to our first person, Graham.
And the first person this week is George Hayter, who says, "There's no end to where this switching can take me. I stayed with the same bank for 52 years, and for 30 years, week in, week out, I was a loyal customer of the same supermarket. Always I tended to leave my money in the same savings account for years, and our house only ever had a couple of electricity suppliers. Until last month. Then I changed my supermarket, my energy supplier, my bank. I moved my savings, and to top off the new broom, I changed my GP. It started with the supermarket. The reason I'd stayed with Sainsbury's all that time was their delicious bread. But finally, it was the Christmas pop songs blaring from the ceiling that prompted me to find somewhere else for groceries. Hugely lower prices at Aldi and Lidl were another reason for wanting to escape. But really, I was driven out by Sainsbury's themselves, with their idiotic loyalty card, insane vouchers, and confusing two-for-one and mix-and-match schemes. Now, like millions of others, I save money by shopping at one of the Germans, where there is no loudspeaker system, and all is peace. Feeling empowered by the switch in retail regime, I googled savings rates and found that one of the best for me was offering up to 4%. That was Santander on, funnily enough, a current account. So I switched current account from Lloyds to Santander. I admit that took a bit of time, nearly an hour in one of their branches, then checking back with Lloyds that they couldn't match it, and then a couple of hours at home tracking down organisations I had to inform of my new account. So far then, less money going out on groceries and more coming in from savings. This was great. What next? Electricity. An hour of maths suggested I could save a packet by switching. So I phoned Scottish Power, and lo and behold, when I told them I wanted to switch, they offered me a cheaper rate for gas as well as electricity. So I'm staying with them for now on their cheap rate. More money saved. Last time I was afflicted, my GP surgery told me I had to wait a month for an appointment, unless it was an emergency. So I moved to another. It took a bit of toing and froing with proof of address and whatnot, but then they took me on. No cash saved on that switch, of course, and I admit I still had to argue for an instant appointment. When the house insurance comes up for renewal, I'll look for a money-saving change there too. Where's it all going to end? At this rate, I shall soon be changing jobs and moving house. Perhaps I'll leave Hampshire, adopt a new language, live abroad, get a divorce, have a sex change. It all started with Sainsbury's.
Thank you. Now, perhaps I should have come under Belgarum. There's a couple of items from Belgarum, John.
Yes, you can always rely on Belgarum to find the light side, and no exception this week. First article, beautiful pictures capture international award. Winchester woman Catherine Skinner has won an award at an international photography competition. The mother of two of Fairfield Road scooped a top 10 Photographer of the Year award at the Guild of Professional Photographers. Mrs. Skinner was ranked sixth in the children, family and lifestyle category. She said, "I'm so proud of this award. It's a really tough competition, and to come in the top 10 is such a fantastic achievement. I'm really glad to be able to put outdoor family and photography in Hampshire on the map, because we have such amazing opportunities and gorgeous locations for photography. I believe children are best photographed at their best outdoors, playing in open spaces. Just let them explore, investigate, run, jump and climb. allow them to be themselves, and you can't fail to get beautiful family pictures. Steve Thirsk, director of the Guild, added, I am both proud and delighted that Catherine has achieved this recognition after 12 months of submitting the highest quality images. The Guild has very demanding standards when judging photographic competitions. The judging is undertaken by a panel of internationally recognised experts from a variety of photographic backgrounds. So Catherine should be delighted with her extraordinary achievement. And so she should, because that article is accompanied by two lovely pictures. The first of a very pretty girl in a blue dress frolicking in a bluebell wood that we have so many of round here. And the second, a boy and a girl talking to each other and comparing flowers in a field of red flowers, which I think are tulips, but I'm not very good at flowers. Second piece. End to free parking decision wins loud approval. Three cheers for Winchester City Council. Around 30 people burst into spontaneous applause as the parking committee scrapped free parking in areas like Courtney Road, Abbots Close and Park Road. This was a decisive victory for residents, who said commuters block driveways and prevent access for important vehicles. The decision also brightens up a winter of discontent at the council, with the run-up to election season disrupted by controversial decisions over Silver Hill and Chesil Street extra care housing. Despite concerns from commuters themselves, Belgarum was pleased to see the community so thankful to their local representatives for making change. The applause, however, was rather unexpected, and there were none more surprised than veteran councillor Sue Nelms, who said she'd never seen the like in all of her years at the council.
Thank you. Now we move on to this week's announcements, and we start with What's On. We've got three concerts to start with, all of which are on Saturday the 14th of March, so a bit of a choice for you this time. They're all at 7:30, Saturday the 14th of March. The first is at St Cross Church, Winchester. It's Five Centuries of Music to Celebrate the Virgin Mary. Works by Talis, Bird, Victoria Morales and others. Tickets are from the Cathedral Box Office. That's 01962 857 275. That's Saturday the 14th of March, 7:30, St Cross Church. Cathedral Box Office 01962 857 275. The second concert is on the same date, 14th of March, the Guildhall at Southampton, and it's the Southampton Philharmonic Choir performing Beethoven's Symphony No. 9 Choral. Details from the Guildhall, box office 02380 632601. That's the Guildhall box office 02380 632601. And the last concert is at Romsey Abbey. Again, Saturday the 14th of March, 7:30. It's a spring concert by Hampshire County Youth Orchestra and the Romsey Youth Choir. And they're performing, amongst others, Brahms Symphony No. 4. You can telephone Romsey Tourist Information for tickets, 01794 512 987. That's Romsey Tourist Information, 01794 512 987. Two items for the theatre. The Theatre Royal Winchester is staging The History Boys on Monday, March the 2nd through till Saturday, March the 7th. So that's all next week. Theatre Royal box office is 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. And finally, the Mayflower Southampton has Edward Scissorhands. And that's running from Tuesday, March the 3rd to Saturday, March the 7th. And the Mayflower box office is 02380 711811. That's 02380 711811. Lighting up time ends Friday the 27th of February at 6:55 a.m. and begins at 5:42 p.m. And next Wednesday the 4th of March it ends at 6:44 a.m. and begins at 5:51 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. And now we continue with items of general news, Nikki.
Well, actually, it is a special report by Duncan Geddes, who takes a look at the High Court Judicial Review judgment into Silver Hill. And it's headed Judge's Damning Verdict. It is all but certain that debate and legal wrangling over Silver Hill will enter a third decade in 2016. An independent review into Winchester City Council's decision-making is set to be launched in the coming weeks, but when and if the results will be published remains uncertain. However, Mrs. Justice Lang's High Court judgment earlier this month shone some light on the Council's unlawful dealings and vindicated some claims made by anti-Silver Hill campaigners. The 36-page ruling says the City Council has been acting unlawfully over Silver Hill since 2004, when the Liberal Democrat-led Cabinet entered a development agreement with the previous developer, Thornhill. The judge said the Cabinet, comprised of several senior Lib Dems of today, including group leader Kelsey Lerney, should have complied with European procurement law, but instead relied on mistaken legal advice. It entered into an agreement with Thornfield Properties because it had a pre-existing commercial relationship with Stagecoach to redevelop its bus station on the site, she ruled. No other contractors were considered, and it is now too late to challenge the lawfulness of the development agreement on this basis. Last summer's Conservative decision to approve what the judge called radical changes to the scheme, dropping 100 affordable homes and the bus station, came in for stronger criticism. The judge suggested that council chiefs deliberately steered their legal advisers to a conclusion which would keep this scheme from public competition. Advisers Deloitte were subject to the constraints imposed by the council, the judgment said, namely that the existing scheme should be preserved and changes should be limited so far as was possible in an attempt to avoid triggering a procurement process. The council was keen to proceed with the scheme as soon as possible, so Deloitte was not asked to assess the merits of this scheme against the possibility of any alternative scheme with any other developer. This decision proved lucrative for co-developer TIAA Henderson. The council has said dropping on-site affordable housing was essential to make the scheme financially viable. John Gillington, representing rival landowner London & Henley, claimed Henderson would make around £11 million from the changes. The judge could not verify the figures but said the current scheme would have been of significantly greater commercial value than the 2004 scheme had it been offered to the market then. The judge's conclusions are damning, but allow time for consideration on how to bring forward the enormous development which has dominated public discourse in Winchester for the last 18 years. Mrs. Justice Lang said, "This is the second occasion on which Winchester City Council has committed such a breach in the lifetime of one contract. It would be an exceptional cause to allow this decision to stand. The Council's failure to follow an open, competitive, transparent and non-discriminatory procurement process for such an important contract at any stage casts real doubt on whether the scheme proposed by the developer is the best scheme on the best terms available. Whilst delay is always regrettable," she added, "there is no pressingly urgent need to develop the site. The Council does have time to consider the various options available to it."
This is headed "Council Urged to Rethink Homes Plan," which shows that Silver Hill is not the only game in town. Alresford Town Chiefs chose the wrong site for major development because of outdated figures and, quote, "prejudicial statements," unquote, it has been claimed. Controversial plans to build on farmland off Sun Lane were based on over-egging of the town's needs, city chiefs heard recently. The town council has sparked a long-standing controversy by suggesting the bulk of required new homes in the local plan should be built on one site. An alternative vision, scattering development throughout the town, has won the support of many residents. Robert Fowler of Sun Hill and Tichborne Down Action Group told Winchester City Council that reports identifying the town's needs had been steered towards building near Sun Lane without the approval of residents who helped to advise them. He said these reports have spectacularly over-egged the requirements in some areas. The documents advise the City Council's Local Plan Part 2, which identifies sites for 12,000 new homes across the district by 2031, including 500 in Alresford.
Bishop urges people to vote wisely in May. The Bishop of Winchester is urging people across the country to vote this year. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin is appealing for people to get involved in the general election in May. And that comes after he worked alongside the House of Bishops of the Church of England to send a letter to parishes across the country expressing hopes for a political party to create new vision. The letter read, "In Britain, we've become so used to believing that self-interest drives every decision that it takes a leap of imagination to argue that there should be stronger institutions for those we disagree with, as well as for those on our side." The letter also defended the right of the church to enter into the political arena. It said, "The claim that religion and political life must be kept separate is, in any case, frequently disingenuous. Most politicians and pundits are happy enough for the churches to speak on political issues, so long as the church agrees with their particular line." In closing, the bishops wrote, "Unless we exercise the democratic rights that our ancestors struggled for, we will share responsibility for the failures of the political classes. It's the duty of every Christian adult to vote, even though it may have to be a vote for something less than the vision that inspires us." Bishop Tim added, "It's crucially important that Christians participate fully in the democratic process and that they vote. As bishops, our role is not to tell people who to vote for, but to encourage people to use their vote wisely to ensure that all those elected are prepared to work collaboratively for the common good of society. Our letter is designed to send out the principles which we believe Christians across the UK should follow when they come to vote in May." And that's accompanied by a picture of the Bishop Tim framed by the nave of our beautiful cathedral.
Bewley to host Severn Rally. The Austin Severn was one of the most popular pre-war cars, with 290,000 built and over 8,000 still surviving today. However, it also played an important part in military efforts both for the British and German sides. Despite its tiny dimensions, it was used extensively for driver training and also liaison duties. The British Expeditionary Force used them early on in the war and later abandoned at Dunkirk. The American version, dubbed the Bantam, was used as a prototype for the Jeep, while the Dixie was used as a mobile machine gun unit. All versions of the Severn have been invited to join a national rally on Sunday, July the 5th at Bewley in Hampshire. The theme will be Austin Sevens and their cousins, and many examples of Dixie, Bantam and the French version of the A7, the Rosengart, are likely to join the hundreds of civilian Austin Sevens on show. Alongside, it is expected that there will be at least a dozen of the now very rare military versions in a special display. The event is sponsored by Warranty Direct Limited and RH Specialist Insurance. From this month, full details and entry forms can be found on their website, which I won't give you now because it's quite complicated. But there's a very good photograph of a green military version of the Austin Severn, and behind it various jeeps, tanks and other things, obviously in some other rally.
Increase in demand for student housing. Demand for student housing in Stanmore is at an all-time high, according to the city's estate agents. Property firms have reported an increase amid warnings from community campaigners that a looming crackdown on landlords will herald a gold rush from investors. Julian Bessie, owner of Martin & Company Letting Agents, said many of its homes have already been let for September 2015, earlier than usual. He said the demand for Stanmore properties, given the yields that they produce, has gone up and up and up in recent years, which therefore means that they can go very quickly. the delays in the new ruling will further increase the demand. Winchester City Council agreed last month to force Winchester City Council agreed last month to force landlords to apply for planning permission before converting family homes into houses in multiple occupation, HMOs, something campaigners claim is upsetting community cohesion and driving up prices. The restrictions are set to come in next year, but the Stanmore HMO lobby argues that delay will result in prospective landlords swooping early to avoid them. The Chronicle spoke to a number of estate and letting agents who said demand for Stanmore HMOs was at a record high. Many said they had not heard of the new rules, and those that had said their landlord's approach had not changed. One firm, Fox & Sons, has delivered leaflets on the estate advertising their sales service in recent weeks, but denied this was a reaction to the council's decision. Some residents have taken to calling landlords whenever they're woken by noisy students in the latest attempt to clamp down on antisocial behaviour, which they say has worsened this year.
And so good news for those who like to eat out in Winchester. And this article is headed, Taste of French Chic is now on the menu. A national chain of French restaurants has opened a Winchester branch following a £1 million refurbishment. The former site of Moss Bros in Upper High Street has undergone around 12 weeks of renovation works ready for the newest Côte Brasserie. The popular French-style 130-seat restaurant already has some 60 sites across the UK. Joint Managing Director Harold Samuelson said, "Winchester is a city steeped in history, and we feel very proud to say that we have a restaurant here. The local culture and the architecture attract many people, and we're looking forward to offering our friendly style and all-day dining to both tourists and locals alike. It's great for us to be joining an already thriving eating-out scene, but at the same time, we're able to offer something different in terms of value and service." Managers have signed a 20-year lease for the property, which cost approximately £1 million to revamp to the brasserie's signature look. And that piece is accompanied by a picture of the staff at the new brasserie looking poised and ready.
Defibrillator donated to village. A community defibrillator has been installed in a village near Bishop's Waltham to help tackle heart emergencies. Durley Parish Council has fitted the machine used to treat life-threatening incidents such as heart attacks at the village hall. Around 45 residents were given dummy training by Stephen Cartwright from South Central Ambulance Service to boost their confidence in using the equipment. The £1,500 installation was paid for by a parishioner in memory of her son, who died after a sudden cardiac arrest. Ambulance staff will provide 999 callers with a code to access the machine on the wall at Durley Memorial Hall in Durley Brook Road.
Medieval stables to be transformed into museum. One of the country's oldest schools is set to transform part of its medieval stables to make way for a museum, which will be open to the public. Winchester College has received planning permission to convert its stables into an area showcasing some of its many treasures. The renovations will include part of the Moberly Library and the Headmaster's House. Members of the museum committee, who've been developing the multi-million pound project for the past 10 years, hope to open the doors to the public in the summer of next year. Chairman of the museum committee, Robert Wyke, said, "It's been very long in its gestation. The idea is to convert spaces that are ancient. Part of the building dates back to the 1390s. And we thought it would be a good idea to do something primarily for educational purposes in the school, but also so the public could have access to it, particularly local schools. There will be access for the pupils through Moberly Library, and that will give access to a mezzanine for displays and teaching. The main room will hold a collection of what we already have. There'll also be a space of various exhibitions, and we'll be able to accept a number of loaned objects. College officials have earmarked £3 million for the project, which includes the initial groundworks as well as running costs. Entry to the museum will be charged, but the college has yet to determine its fee. Artifacts set to be displayed include a range of Chinese porcelain and Greek vases donated by some of the college's supporters, as well as a 19th century stained glass window depicting the life of Lancelot and Guinevere, which was unearthed during the site's excavation. Archaeologists are currently on site at the Grade 1 listed building before foundation works go in. Mr. Wyke said the project had been largely supported with the help of museum professor Rachel Ragg and local historian John Crook. I'd also like to say thank you to John Faulkner. He did an awful lot of the original thinking, but he retired before the formal process began. And difficult to describe the little pictures. There's a picture of the range of stables buildings, and a part that's been dug out and an area unearthed, difficult to see what it is. And then there's an artist's impression of what is presumably the kind of interior of the building. And you can see the areas for display and the steps up to the mezzanine area. It looks a very exciting, modern, interesting building.
Annie takes top spot in poetry contest. St Swithin school pupil Annie Bolton from Winchester won the Hampshire Poetry by Heart competition at the Guildhall. Annie, who's aged 17, was representing St Swithin's against 8 other competitors from other schools across Hampshire. Each pupil was challenged to memorise and recite 2 poems, one published before 1914 and one in or after 1914. Pupils choose these from the timeline anthology of over 600 years of poetry on the Poetry by Heart website. In addition, contestants this year also recite a third poem from a special collection of World War I poems as part of the centenary commemorations. Annie's chosen poems were Ozymandias by Percy Bysshe Shelley, Originally by Caroline Duffy, and Setting Out by Ernst Stadler. That last one's taken from the World War I era. Judging's based on 5 criteria. Voice and articulation, say that word carefully, articulation. Evidence of understanding, level of difficulty, overall performance and accuracy. She'll now go on to the national final at Homerton College, Cambridge, on March 19th to the 21st. Alison Oliver, head of English at St Swithin, said, "Annie impressed the judges with her 3 evocative, powerful recitations. There was a very high level of performance from all the competitors, which makes her win all the more notable. And there's a lovely picture accompanying that of Annie looking very proud and happy."
70% rise in number of sex offence cases. The number of sexual offences reported to Winchester Police has risen by nearly 70% over the last 12 months. In the year ending September the 30th, 2014, 117 victims contacted Hampshire Police, compared with 82 cases during the same period in 2013. Simon Hayes, Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire, said, "Although there has been an increase in the recording of sexual offences over the past 12 months, figures generally show they are lower than they were 10 years ago, and certainly much lower than when they peaked in 2005. I'm not aware of any specific reason for this, but I do know that in the past few years, there has been an increase in the reporting of historical offences in the wake of Jimmy Savile and the Operation Yew Tree investigations." The Chief Constable commented along those lines at his address to delegates at my recent victims' conference. He stated that serious sexual offences are up 50%, but half of those reported are historic. However, the constabulary has made significant changes in the investigation of these most heinous crime and the support offered to victims. I'm also advised that the decision to no crime rape offences will now be made at Deputy Chief Constable level. Detective Chief Inspector Scott Clark said, "Reports of sexual offences are treated very seriously and investigated thoroughly. These investigations often involve a large number of police officers and police staff who meticulously look at all of the information and evidence available and are also committed to providing the necessary support to the victims. A number of high-profile, non-recent cases have led to an increase in public confidence that these matters will be taken seriously. I want victims to continue to feel confident in reporting sexual offences to us, knowing that we will take their report seriously."
This article is headed "No Obstacle Too Great for Marathon Man." A grandfather with 15 grandchildren, who is blind, wheelchair-bound and battling cancer, is preparing for a full marathon and hopes to raise more than £10,000. Martin Jacobs, who is aged 70, has faced a string of illness over the past decade, but is determined to do his bit for charity by taking part in various physical challenges. He's already completed the Great South Run, but in April will do the Greater Manchester Marathon with the help of two guides. "I'm expecting it to take 7 to 8 hours," he said. "My sense of humour is still working." The Winchester resident wants to raise money for Click Sergeant, Trinity Winchester and the Alzheimer's Society, and is hoping the power of the internet can help him smash his target. He's also due to become a grandfather for the 16th time in August and said he wants to create an example for his growing family. "It's never been done before, and it will be a unique achievement and part of my bucket list," he said. "I want to leave a legacy, make them proud." Mr. Jacobs said he already has support from local pub owners, but wants to get as many businesses behind him as possible. He is organising a 60s night, raffle and other events to boost fundraising. To support Mr. Jacobs, you can go online at facebook.co.uk/allthewaysall the way with MLJ. That's all one word, all the way with MLJ. And there's a photograph of a very jolly Martin Jacobs with his trainer, Lydia Lockhart, at the gym, in his dark glasses, smiling, grinning, and his training gear. And there's a little inset picture of him on one of the machines, ones you grab with your hands and pull up various weights and things. Anyway, looking very happy with himself and obviously enthusiastic for his project.
And Fire Station finally set for redevelopment. After months of delays, a housing developer has finally fully acquired Winchester's old fire station. Bargate Homes has completed its purchase of the station on North Walls, which dates from the mid-1930s and which has stood empty since 2011 following the fire service's move to a new base on Eastern Lane at Winall. It's currently being demolished and will be replaced by 15 new homes. Bargate Managing Director Angus Cook, collecting the keys from Dave Turner, Group Manager for Winchester, and Richard Kinchington from Hampshire County Council, said, "This is an incredibly exciting project for us and is the fruition of a great deal of hard work."
New Blood Runners bikes a real lifesaver. A new motorbike will be a lifesaver for patients needing blood transfusions. After 2 years of fundraising, Serve Wessex, the Blood Runners have expanded their fleet with the addition of a third motorcycle, an £18,000 Triumph Tiger 800. The bike will be ridden by members of the 80-strong volunteer group which delivers urgent blood supplies across to hospitals across the south. The cash was raised by charity volunteers, including Chairman Dan Brown and Paul Slocum and Paul's son Andy, who collected donations in town centres, outside supermarkets and at 999 open days at fire stations across Hampshire, as well as at Gosport Lifeboat Station. Businesses also helped raise the money by choosing Serve Wessex as their charity of the year. Every night of the year, three of the serve team give up their time to provide the vital out-of-hours delivery service, saving the National Health Service more than £18,000 per year in courier fees. The purchase of a third motorcycle means that all three on-duty riders will be able to use specially marked bright yellow machines rather than having to use their own bikes. Mr. Brown said, "We could have a complete team out on marked bikes, and that would not cost our riders anything at all." The charity is now saving for a fourth bike. For more information or to donate, visit servewessex.org.uk, and serve is spelled S-E-R-V, Wessex, W-E-S-S-E-X.org.uk. And it's a lovely picture of the Blood Runners, Andy Slocum, Paul Slocum and Danny Brown, with their very fierce new Triumph Tiger with all its yellow and black colouring.
Hampshire Chamber of Commerce has backed plans to restore the Waterside railway line back to serving passengers. The move follows a recent consultation about the future of railways across southern England. A Chamber representative said, "When Chandler's Ford station was reopened in 2003, the rail service was intended to run to Marchwood and Hythe on the Waterside line. Although recent studies by Hampshire County Council have rejected the reopening for a low sum of about £16 million when compared with other transport schemes, it is essential a fully costed project be investigated so as to provide an economic and affordable passenger service that will reduce road congestion on the Western Solent, creating a proper alternative to the motor car and improved access to the eastern edge of the New Forest National Park." County Councillor David Harrison, the member for Totton South and Marchwood, responded, "I can't think of a more influential body that understands the business case for restoring a passenger service along the Waterside. It's time now for Hampshire County Council to change tack and to start pushing this project forward."
Well, you can't beat the energy of youth. And this piece is headed "Students Bewitch Rock Challenge Audience." There was witchcraft and voodoo spells as young dancers put on a magical show. Rock Challenge is back in Southampton, and hundreds of school and college students have been battling it out to be named Dancing Kings and Queens. Tuesday's top prize went to Regent's Park Community College with Mobile Lovers, a performance exploring our relationship with the internet. Second prize was snapped up by Woodlands Community College with a dance exploring the damaging effects of a culture obsessed with beauty. And third prize went to the Henry Court Community College in Fareham, which looks at the life of Mozart. Students from Peter Simmons College delved into the world of witchcraft with their dance about voodoo queen Marie Laveau and her mother Marguerite. Swanmore College, meanwhile, performed a dance called "Where Have All the Children Gone?", telling the story of three missing girls. Winners from each heat will compete again this summer. And that's accompanied by two very vivid and striking photographs of young people giving their all in the competition.
School traders head for semi-final. Four King's School pupils have beaten 30,000 competitors and business professionals in a national stock exchange challenge. The team from Winchester Secondary School raised £25,000 trading virtual shares over 3 months. Jamie Rant, Jamie Strangeway, Joe Southerden and Ben Page will now compete in the semi-finals of the IFS Student Investor Challenge in March. Supported by Bloomberg, the competition gives teams of students £100,000 of virtual money to trade in FTSE 100 companies. The team are now on track to win an all-expenses-paid trip to the final in New York. Alison Park, Vice Principal at IFS University Challenge, said, "This competition gives students the opportunity to gain first-hand experience of making investment decisions, which will benefit them throughout their lives when making financial choices. It also introduces them to core concepts such as risk, reward and diversification. This is a real achievement, and many congratulations go to the team from King's School."
Young Pirates, a Scout Night fundraiser. Scouts in Coldon Common have been furiously fundraising to send two of their lucky members to an international jamboree. The 9th Winchester Scout Group hosted a special race night at the community centre, raising £120. It was one of several events, including a fun fancy dress session, that the group organised in a bid to get their members out to Kirarahama in Japan later this year, which saw some 70 parents and friends turn out to support them. And some of the youngsters at the fancy dress session are pictured. There are 9 of them, and they've all come in a sort of pirate costume, with large hats, one tricorn and the other, you know, sort of side-to-side ones. They're all clutching these swords, and a young lass at the bottom of the picture kneeling down and looking in imminent danger of being sliced by the boy next to her with his big cutlass. And interesting, there are 8 of them and 4 stereotypes of pirates, 4 of them with patches over their eyes, but all looking as if they're enjoying themselves and looking forward to raising enough money to send them off to Japan.
And here's news of a very good local initiative for young people, headed Apprentices Join Fire Service for a Day. It was an unusual day at the office for 9 youngsters as they learnt about the role of emergency services. With everything from safety presentations to learning how firefighters cut casualties from cars, the Winchester City Council apprentices were put through their paces at the city's fire station last Wednesday. The visit was part of their attempt to be crowned winners of the Brathay Apprentice Challenge, which searches for the apprentice team of the year by testing team building, leadership, logistical and communication skills. The City Council has put together a team of mentors made up of some of their officers who help the apprentices with the challenge, including Rebecca Hallett of Neighbourhood Services, who said, "The fire service is a great model of a team working together. By seeing them work as a team, they can put their own skills and knowledge into practice." The apprentices, who are all aged from 16 to 24, work in various council departments, including human resources and communications. Mentor Ken Brown, programme manager for EU funding, said the apprentice programme is very competitive and gives youngsters that would otherwise struggle the opportunity of career progression. The apprentice team leader, James Roberts, aged 19, said the fire station visit was, quote, "very helpful." He went on to say, "When you go into any organisation and see how they run and work, it's very interesting." More than 70 teams have entered the Brathay Apprentice Challenge, and the final is in July. And there we have a picture of some of the apprentices who are clearly having a very good time, all dressed up in fire service uniform and practising getting somebody out of a car.
And we've got some more dressing up now, but this time it's Romans. Romans come back bearing gifts. The Romans are back, but this time they're not invading Britain. Winchester's City Museum played host to Roman legionnaires and citizens to bring 2,000-year-old history to life. They spent 2 days at the museum in the square before marching on and leaving Winchester, which was known as Venta Belgarum in Roman times. And there's some lovely photographs of Madeline Phelps, aged 9, and Daisy Phelps, 7, who meet the Roman ladies Angie Besant and Elisa Van Lint, all dressed up in their sort of Roman ladies' clothes. And the girls looking thrilled. And then a young Freddie Hodgkins, 5, meets Roman Gary Besant, who appears to have removed his helmet and put it on this very small Freddie Hodgkins of 5, who is looking slightly bewildered by it.
County councillors of all parties have formed a united front to fight for a better deal for Hampshire. They will send a cross-party letter urging Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government, Eric Pickles, to stop cutting the authority's funding. Councillors fear further cuts could damage frontline services, including safeguarding some of the county's most vulnerable children and adults. The authority has lost 51% of its government funding in the last 6 years, As previously reported, library funding has been slashed, neighbourhood wardens axed, bus subsidies removed, and hundreds of council jobs lost. Funding has also been stopped for gardening and handyman services at sheltered accommodation and frail pensioners' homes. Hampshire is bracing itself for a further £100 million in cuts that are likely to come into effect after 2017. The letter to Mr. Pickles comes after a motion put forward at the last full council meeting in Winchester by Basingstoke Labour councillors Chris Connor and Jane Frankham, when the authority agreed its 2015-16 budget. It will say that the council will find it difficult to take the same level of cuts in the next parliament, as it has already made most of the cuts possible. They say further cuts could put services at risk, including adult care and children's services. Campaign group The Taxpayers' Alliance said it is time for the county council to dip into its £400 million reserves to cover the shortfall. Chief Executive Jonathan Iserby said, "The council needs to stop the publicity stunts and get on with delivering the essential services taxpayers have paid for and deserve. It has acted prudently to build up reserves, and it's time to use them. Funding is extremely tight, and that means we need to find necessary savings in both central and local government. But there's no point of leaving £400 million in a pot marked 'Do Not Touch' when we need to deliver essential services." MPs and parliamentary hopefuls have backed the council's calls. New Forest East MP Julian Lewis said, "Many MPs are worried that the balance has shifted too much against the more rural regions in the country, in the sense that the big cities have been gaining." Ben Nicholls, Liberal Democrat candidate for Romsey and Southampton North, said it's good to see our county councillors putting party politics aside to focus on the major ways in which cuts are affecting everyday life. "We all know that this government inherited some pretty shoddy finances, but simply knowing that doesn't make life any easier." New Forest East Labour candidate Andrew Pope said, "I support the motion. There's a cross-party view that cuts to local government funding have been too far and too fast, and some of the decisions made for the coming budget are the wrong priorities."
Yes, continuing on this more serious vein, here's an article headed "Questions Raised on Mental Health Care." Hampshire County Council's deputy leader has demanded to know how much money has been saved by axing one-third of the county's adult mental health hospital beds. The cuts were made 2 years ago by Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust in a bid to save almost £3 million. Yet a meeting of the Health and Wellbeing Board in Winchester heard how demand for Hampshire's 107 acute adult mental health hospital beds is now, quotes, "regularly exceeded." Councillor Keith Manns wanted to know the exact current need for hospital beds, as well as how much money has actually been saved by the cuts, given that private hospital beds are now having to be bought to plug the gap. He reminded the meeting that he had advised caution during the public consultation before this controversial move was made. Councillor Mann said, "Southern Health took a decision to shut one-third of acute mental health beds in Hampshire. It was meant to save £4.4 million gross, with a spend of £1.5 million on hospital at home. Suddenly, it's 2 years further on, and I would like to know whether that saving has been made or whether it has been spent on providing the shut beds in the private sector. In my opinion, there should at least be an acknowledgement that perhaps they shut the beds too quickly and should have waited for results from hospitals as to whether demand was going down or up." He added, "Was £2.9 million saved, and where did the money go?" One in six Hampshire people experience mental health issues. and there has been a marked increase in severely unwell children and teenagers in the past 10 years. Meeting documents confirmed that there had indeed been a marked increase in demand for hospital services in the past year, and there was sometimes not a single available intensive care bed available in the whole of England. Director of Mental Health and Learning Disabilities for South of Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust, Dr. Leslie Stevens, said that she would provide a written course for Dartford Council Amends in due course.
Fundraisers make a big splash for good causes. Whether it was butterfly, backstroke or the full-on front crawl, Wintonians did it all to raise cash for local causes. Now in its 10th year, the annual Winchester Rotary Swimathon proved as successful as ever, as more than 120 people took to the water at Winchester College's pool on Saturday. Some 20 teams of six tagged in and out over seven gruelling hours to raise much-needed funds for Hampshire charities. More than £6,000 was raised for the Rotary alone last year, despite the event's delay due to severe weather conditions which flooded the pool. But this year couldn't have gone more smoothly, which organiser Mike Slynn said was largely due to some of the Rotary's committed members. "People are always looking for ways to collect money, and this is an attractive way to do it," he said. "It just attracts people's attention. It's a nice setting, very much a team event, and that's why people come here. People want to become part of it and they feel good as they're collecting money for their favourite charities as well as helping the Rotary. We're grateful to Winchester College for hosting this. It's so fantastic that it's in the city centre because everyone knows where it is, and we'd also like to thank the Mayor for supporting us. We want everyone to come and join us next year." Rotary President Jill Russell added, "People are raising money and they're having fun doing it. For the first time, the group has used Facebook to promote the event. The group that swam the most lengths was the King Penguins team from the Penguins Swimming Club with an impressive 229 lengths in 55 minutes. Blake Morgan came in second with 168 lengths. And there's a photograph of the Rotary President Jill Russell, Abby Pease, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry and Mitch Lown, who must be either a lifeguard or a teacher, get the race started. And then there's two pictures of the competitors in the water, one lot not doing much swimming. They appear to be giggling rather more than swimming. Another doing an extremely effective-looking crawl.
A major conference will bring together experts to discuss ways of delivering effective rural health services. The Rural Health Conference will be held on June the 11th at the Health and Wellbeing Innovation Centre in Truro, Cornwall. Speakers will include Public Health England Chief Executive Duncan Selby, who will give a keynote address about achieving excellence in promoting public health across rural communities. Lord Cameron, author of the recently published Rural Proofing Review, will talk from a personal perspective and highlight reasons for a new government and those working in rural health care and social care. Professor Alison Marshall of the University of Cumbria will discuss whether digital technologies can help make good rural health. The conference comes amid warnings from MPs that it is becoming increasingly difficult to fund rural health care.
And now, watch out, everybody, because as this item tells us, it's showtime for Brownies and Guides. Brownies and guides from across Winchester and Hampshire have been honing their singing and acting skills as they prepare to showcase their talent at Southampton Guildhall. In a few weeks' time, the youngsters will take to the stage for their performance of Showtime, which has a theme of world travel this year. Last week, 140 girls tried on their costumes at the latest all-day rehearsal before learning how to apply their characters' makeup. Debbie Wyatt said, "They are going to perform an amazing show. I'm Chief of Wardrobe, and I can tell you that the sewing team are well on their way to completing 540 costumes taken from 290 metres of linen and cloth, which we've adorned with over 1 mile of sequins and sparkles so far. The cast of Showtime will be performing at the 1,700-seat venue from April the 10th for a four-day run. And there's a delightful picture of five brownies looking so excited and happy, having tried on their new costumes for the first time.
Feeling chuffed? It was full steam ahead when model railway enthusiasts gathered for a flagship Hampshire show. People of all ages flocked to the Eastleigh Model Railway Show at Fleming Park Leisure Centre. The event unites modellers from across Europe and is organised by Solent Model Railway Group. Intricate displays featured engines running on a range of gauges, depicting scenes from various ages and countries, including France, the Czech Republic and Japan. It was also the chance for families to hop aboard vintage buses shuttling people to and from the show from Eastleigh and Southampton Airport Parkway stations, and there's a charming picture of Freya Smith, 7, and Katie Harding, 8, enjoying the Solent Model Railway Group's display, but they both have the naughtiest faces you've ever seen. I'm wondering what they're thinking of doing to these trains. And then also Gary Lefebvre and Pete Boyce share a joke at the show, showing some extraordinary modelling that had been put together by this exhibition.
This is the Westminster Diary by Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. And there's a picture of him smiling. My constituents will be very aware of how, by now, of my interest in all matters relating to the health service. I said from day one it would be my priority, and I've remained true to that promise, both in Westminster and locally, where I've immersed myself in really understanding the issues. The local health economy is hugely complicated, but I've enjoyed the challenge of understanding how it works, its challenges and external pressures. That understanding includes, of course, the acute trust and discussions being had about a possible reconfiguration of hospital services at RHCH. As our MP, I welcome a £160 million trust investment in local services, because I want the best for us. But this one has a long way to run, and my constant challenge to local clinicians is to convince us why the mooted new critical treatment hospital will be better, including in obstetric and maternity care, where I still have many concerns. That is why I organised and chaired two big public meetings last year to give constituents the chance to question the key people. Above all, I'm trying to understand the health economy across our entire area and seeing how that fits together in the context of the newly fashioned NHS for the long-term benefit of the people I represent. Equally, the NHS is not just about hospitals. I want us to benefit from new investment as well as be at the forefront of a drive for better outcomes on cancer and long-term conditions, for instance. Through my work with breast cancer in Parliament these past 55 years, I know how much more we can do. Furthermore, we need to manage sustainable access to primary care, and it's never wasted time to sit down with local GPs and discuss where government can help and where it most certainly does not. I did that with the partners at the Grattan Surgery in Sutton, Scotney recently, which was really useful. It's also about the integration of NHS and social care, and there are great things happening locally. I visited Westholme in Harestock Road to see the new hub facility, which, working with the NHS, helps get elderly people out of hospital into a place where they can make sensible decisions about their long-term future. And finally, it's definitely about parity for mental health care locally, making sure we treat a mental illness no differently to a physical one. I met with MIND recently to discuss the Care Crisis Concordat, which is a new agreement between services and agencies involved in the care and support of people in crisis. It sets out how organisations will work together better to make sure that people get the help they need when they are having a mental health crisis. It's very important we make this Concordat work, and it's integrated with the many excellent charities we have in this field, including the Winchester Befrienders, who came to see me the other day. You can connect with them via www.befriendersofwinchester.org. all one word, befrienders@winchester.com.
Charity race night on the cards. Winchester's Princes Mead Preparatory School is to hold a charity race night on March the 6th. The event, to be held in the sports hall, has been organised by the Parents Association, and it will raise money for a school in India which Princess Mead gives ongoing financial support, including paying for all of the teaching staff. Guests will eat a meal provided by the city's Gandhi restaurant and have the chance to win prizes, including a hamper from the Good Life Farm Shop and tickets to Newbury races. And no contact details with that, but I'm quite certain that if you get on to Princes Mead School, they'll be able to provide them.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. Excuse me. Thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And John Regan.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.